morning, everybody. Parshas Vayechi, the last parsha in Sefer Bereishis, is a somber parsha. And a lot of people, I think, focus on the brachos that Yaakov gave to his children on his deathbed. We're going to focus on a bit of a different topic towards the end of the parsha. The Torah tells us in source number one, Vayashav Yosef Mitzrayim Ahu Ve'achav V'chol Ha'alim Yitol Likvor Et Aviv Acharei Kavro Et Aviv, that Yosef returns back to Mitzrayim. He and all of his brothers and everyone who went up to Israel to bury Yaakov now return back after burying Yaakov. Vayiru achei Yosef kimeis avihem. So the brothers see that their father passed away. Vayomru lo, and they say to one another, Vayomru, and they say to one another, lu yistimenu Yosef, perhaps Yosef is now going to really hate us. Vahashev yashiv lanu es kol hara'a sher gamalnu itanu. Ito. And he's going to finally pay us back for all that we did to him. And the brothers start shaking in their boots, and we'll see in the later sources how the brothers concoct a story. They send a message to Yosef saying, our dad said before he passed away, but we'll get there in due time. It's really quite an emotional part of the story. But let's first explore a little bit why the brothers got so anxious. Was there an event that set off their anxiety? Was it simply the fact that now that Yaakov is dead, they said to themselves, oh man, this is it. Now Yosef is going to get back at us. We've discussed a number of times in different contexts throughout Sefer Bereishis that as long as the Tati was alive, there was a little bit less fear on behalf of the children. Right? We saw that when it came to Yaakov not being quite as afraid of Esav killing him. We saw that Yaakov himself was confident that the brothers would not kill Yosef as long as Yaakov was alive. So we've seen this theme throughout Sefer Bereishis. So now the Tata is dead, and then the kids are nervous. But did some other event prompt this anxiety? That's what I'd like to discuss with you. Yes?
There was, before the Pash, I think it said they did not come, Yosef did not, associate with his brothers.
Okay, so that is, so Rashi says that. Well, we'll see that in a little bit. But from the text itself, just simply looking at Pasuk Yedalit, which tells us that they returned back to Egypt. And then Pasuk Tevav, nothing happens in between. All the brothers say to one another is, oh man, now Yosef is going to get us back. We don't see any concrete textual event taking place between the two. So look at the Cheskuni. I'm sorry, Chami, you were going to say something?
I have maybe a question to make or a statement. The mere fact that they went back to Egypt with him, this is what made them think or worry about it. Uh-huh. Because why did they have to go there? Anyway, they already got the food, he already introduced himself that he's the brother, don't worry,
all their family.
It was from God.
But Yaakov had been living in Mitzrayim for 17 years. All of their families were down there. So they had to go back down to retrieve their family. It wasn't seamless to just stay in Israel. So let me show you the Cheskuni. Cheskuni says something magnificent. I imagine it's based on the Medrash. I haven't seen the Medrash inside. But look at this Cheskuni in source number 2. Vayomru lu yistimen Yosef. Perhaps Yosef hates us now. Read this Cheskuni with me. Sheshav mikvuras aviv. When they returned back from burying Yaakov, Avar al-Bor shlishlichuhu achiv. They passed over the pit that Yosef had been sent into. Uverech elav, and Yosef stood there and he made a bracha. Sha'asali nisim b'makom hazeh. That's a bracha. People have to say if a tremendous miracle takes place in them at a certain location and they return back to that location. So you have to make a bracha. So Taka, that's what Yosef did. He passed by the boar, and he stood there. You can imagine, it's a very emotional moment for Yosef. And he makes the bracha. V'haya mikarvan b'shvi... I apologize. V'haim shamu al-kain. They heard about this. Interesting, they didn't necessarily see it. The Cheskuni writes, they heard about it. Maybe Yosef was sensitive enough not to bring his brothers there. Maybe he went by himself. Interesting, right? V'haim shamu al-kain. They heard this. And they heard, and they thought... Now Yosef is going to get back to us. He's going back to those points in time that we're not proud of. But now that Yosef has gone back there, maybe now he's going to finally get back at us, retribution for all that we did to him. It's a fantastic cheskuni. He passed by the boar. He made a bracha. The brothers heard about it. They got wind about this, and then they start shaking in their boots. I'm sorry?
It could be that they physically heard this. Period. Then
Akenya Rukin. Very okay. You're right. Behem Shamu. Akenya. Okay. Either way, Behem Shamu. They heard. They heard what was going on. But again, I think that there's a deal there. They didn't see. Yosef did not bring his brothers to the pit. They shouldn't have to relive it. But Yosef himself wanted to make a bracha. But they got wind of it, that Yosef is recalling what took place. So that's why they started to be very fearful. It's fascinating, Cheskuni. Rashi in source number 3 says something that someone mentioned before. In source number 3, Vayu achei Yosef kimes avihem. The brothers saw that their father passed away. So Rashi says, Mahu vayiru. What do you mean they saw? There's nothing to see. They know. Vayidu. What's vayiru? They saw that their father passed away. That implies that they visually saw something taking place that was correlated with their father's passing. So writes Rashi, Hikiru bimisaso etzel Yosef. They saw that the death had made an impact on the way Yosef interacts with the brothers. Shehayu rigilin lis'od imo al shulchano shel Yosef. Originally, before Yaakov passed away, they would all eat together in the same table. V'haya mekarvan b'shvil kavod aviv. And he would bring them close together. Again, this was all in honor of the father, Yaakov. U'mishemes Yaakov lo korvan. But once Yaakov passed away, so Yosef wasn't bringing them to his table, he wasn't being as kind anymore. Now, they explain that Yosef was not necessarily acting with vengeance. Yosef actually had his brother's protection in mind. He didn't want them known at this point as Yosef's little family that he favors. Yosef didn't think it was safe or a politically savvy thing to do. When Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, the famine stopped. That's what the Midrashim tell us. So Yaakov was an icon in the land of Egypt. So as long as Yaakov was there, Yosef didn't feel any hesitation to favor his family because everybody appreciated the uniqueness of Yaakov Avinu. But when Yaakov passes, Yosef thought it was dangerous for the brothers to be seated around the table for Yosef to play favorites so clearly, so he actually took a step back. It was for the brothers' benefit. But the brothers interpreted it that Yosef was now beginning to plan his vengeance. Yes?
I have a question. It's not clear to me because we know that in purpose Yosef stood the way for his father in order that neither one of them will be able to talk of what
happened. Right, we mentioned that last week. It's a midrash. Exactly.
Right, so therefore, how could they sit at the same table?
It's a very good point, but the midrash is very specific that Yosef was never alone with his father. When his brothers were around, he would spend all the time in the world with his dad. The Midrash says that Yosef was never alone with his father, lest his father ask Yosef, Yosef, what happened all those years ago? But Rashi is not inconsistent with the Midrash. Were you going to say something? No? Okay, so that's... Yes, please.
I mean, just reading the Pasuk, it's clear. All the Chizkuni and Rashi, I'm making an old... The old Rashi.
Correct.
But it's nice to think yourself into the psychology of something.
Right.
But they should say maybe, but not.
Well, that they do say maybe. Vayomru Lu. Lu is the man of Yosef. Lu is perhaps.
Rashi
maybe.
Should say maybe they
did that. You're saying Rashi and Cheskuni are speaking too definitively for your liking because it's not clear in the text? Yeah, okay, so that's the Derech of the Mefarshim. So Malbim is a little more grounded. So let's look at Malbim. Malbim has two different understandings. The first one is based on the family dynamics. And the second understanding is based more on human psychology in general. So look in source number 4 of the Malbim. Vayiru achei Yosef kimes avihem, be'od avihem chai. As long as Yaakov was still alive, hayah achva beinehem mitzad ha'av hachai, shekula mishtatvim bo. As long as Yaakov was alive, they all rallied around Yaakov. This was a dysfunctional family. Right? If brothers could sell one brother and send them off, ship him off, and contemplate even killing him, there was dysfunction. Dysfunction doesn't heal itself overnight, and sometimes not even over decades. But as long as the Tata was around, as long as Yaakov was here, everyone was able to rally around their father Yaakov. Which, by the way, the Malbim sees this, not just psychologically speaking, but in the Pesukim. Well, how does the Torah describe this situation? Vayu achei Yosef kimes avihem. The brothers of Yosef saw that their father passed away. So the Torah is focusing us on the father. When the father was alive, so everyone was able to rally around the father. Uveod shaloni kaver, and as long as Yaakov had not been buried, v'nisafed kalacha, and was not eulogized properly, haisa ha'achva mitzad shekula mishtatvin be'evel. As long as the father had not yet properly been buried, so everyone is able to rally around the grief. Right? Well, again, we know, experientially, families that don't jive super well in times of need, God forbid in times of mourning, are able to gel, are able to come together, because you can rally around the difficult situation. So says the Malbim, as long as the Tata was around, everyone rallied around the father Yaakov. When Yaakov passed away, and we know it's a little bit of time before Yaakov was actually buried, he was embalmed, he was eulogized in Mitzrayim. There was a whole sequence of events. So as long as Yaakov was not fully buried and not 6 feet under, so they were rallying around the feelings of mourning and grief. Ki gam ze ye'orer ha'achva. That also inspires feelings of love and brotherly affection. Vi'atha. But now when it's all over, hekiru vi'du shemes aviham. They realize, oy vavoy, that is gone. That point of unity is out the window. And the fact that we were rallying during the Shiva period, I say that quote unquote, it wasn't a real Shiva period, but that's also over. Shein davar shiya aged ha'achva b'neim. There's nothing that will connect us anymore. Ki ha'achva mitzad atzma te'orer eva. Because simply rallying around the fact that we're all brothers will only engender animosity. Ki sheyizkor mashasalo. When Yosef, oh, these are my brothers, this is how they're relating to me? These are my brothers? Brother sell a brother? That's what we do in the family? So the Malbim said there was nothing particularly razzle-dazzle that took place. It wasn't passing by the pit. It wasn't that Yosef interacted with them any different. It was simply that as long as Yaakov was around, they rallied around Yaakov. And when Yaakov passed away, they were able to come together in jail because they were all experiencing the grief. But when that's over, then what? And the Malbim says that's why the brothers began to be fearful. Now that there's no point of connection, except that we're all brothers, well, that's not a great point of connection for us because that makes us look bad, what we did to our brother, you know, so many decades ago. So far, so good. So that's the Malbim, that's his insight vis-a-vis family dynamics. The Malbim in source number 4, paragraph 2, says something fantastic. I'll share with you outside, we can read a little bit inside. The Malbim says that not only did Yosef not take a step back, he continued to shower them with love. But when you're carrying a chip on your shoulder, and people are continuing to be nice to you and nice to you, that makes you feel worse and worse. So as long as Yaakov was around, okay, so again, the family rallied around Yaakov, they didn't feel the same burden. But now that Yaakov is gone, and they have to come face to face emotionally with their brother because there's no one else in the room, as Yaakov continued to be nice to them, they felt more horrible and more horrible. And that's what prompted them to say, Luis Dimena Yosef. It's almost like, how can Yosef not hate us? He's being so nice of it, it's terrible. It's eating away at us. It's a very interesting psychological insight. So look in source number 4, paragraph 2. Vayomru, Luis Dimena Yosef. Perhaps Yosef hates us. Kfar be'arti v'sefer Artzos HaShalom. The Malbim apparently wrote another sefer called Artzos HaShalom. Mashikasev HaChacham, what Shlomo HaMelech wrote, Im Ra'av So'necha, if your enemy is hungry, Hachiluhu Lechem, feed him bread. Shehanekama HaYoser Gedola Me'oivo, the greatest vengeance, revenge against your enemy, Hu Im Tachas Evaso V'hara She'asalo, Yisimeyu Me'ochle Shulchano, V'yaseimo Achtov HaChesed. The greatest revenge you can get with someone is being nice to them when they were mean to you. Because that makes the person on the receiving end, the one who was not nice to begin with, feel even worse. You fight fire with fire, okay, so it's all fair game. But you're nice to me when I did something so bad, it makes me feel even worse. So that's exactly what was going on over here as well. The Malbim goes on to say, She'az yaskir tamid mashru hara lasot. Because then it's always on the front burner. You're always thinking, oh my gosh, I did this terrible thing to such a person, and that person being so nice to me, it just eats away at you. In a way that it wouldn't if you were fighting fire with fire. So says the Malbim, that's what was going on over here. The brothers were being showered with love and affection by Yosef. Nothing changed at all. But now that Yaakov is out of the picture and they had to really confront their brother as a brother, not just as a son of Yaakov, where Yaakov was in the picture, it ate away at them. And they couldn't take it. And they were so overwhelmed with guilt that they ended up saying to one another, how can Yosef not hate us? This is how he's treating us? How can he not hate us? It doesn't make sense to us. So really a very interesting insight of the Malbim. So four different approaches this morning. Why is it that specifically after Yaakov passes, that the brothers begin to say to one another, maybe Yosef is going to hate us, we need to go ahead and try to defuse the situation. So again, the Chaskuni says that what prompted their angst is that as they were traveling back from burying Yaakov, Yosef passes by the pit where he was sold, where he was thrown into and subsequently sold, and he makes the bracha, and the brothers get wind of this, and they say, oh man, Yosef is going back to that point in time, and we're going to suffer now the consequences of our actions. Rashi tells us that Yosef removed himself from the brothers. It was for the brothers' benefit, but the brothers didn't read it that way. Remember, that also relates to what we discussed last week, how when Yosef revealed himself, he was trying to be friendly. But the brothers had this chip on their shoulder. They were overwhelmed with guilt. So what did they hear when Yosef said, O Ravi Chai? They heard, Avi, but not our father. Just taking you back, how the brothers clearly carried around. How could they not? But they clearly carried around this tremendous load on their shoulder for what they did. Tremendous. And everything that went on in Mitzrayim always harkened back to that moment. And certainly, if they couldn't divulge it to Yaakov, and there's a certain amount of it's a cleansing feeling when you can admit your guilt, right? It's cathartic. And when the brothers were never able to tell Yaakov what happened, so they just always carried it with them, and that doesn't go away. And that's what you see originally when Yosef reveals himself, and now you're seeing that as well over here. Yosef was just being Yosef. But it prompted a lot of anxiety on their end. So Rashi says again that Yosef removed himself. The Malbim says that as long as Yaakov was around, they rallied around Yaakov. When Yaakov passed, they had the grief that united them. And once that was over, that's when the brothers began to feel a point of anxiety. And that last insight of the Malbim is that it was dafka because Yosef kept on being nice that they felt worse and worse. And they said, listen, how can Yosef do this? He must hate us. It doesn't make sense. Yes?
They did pay for it. By being there, they made it time later.
Okay.
In a way, they did pay for it.
But the brothers didn't. The brothers didn't know that. The brothers didn't know that at the time.
You said that they carried with them the whole thing. Even no matter, like you said, that if the best revenge is when you give it to somebody that did wrong to you, you are acting like your best friend,
right.
Giving him everything.
Right. Right.
You cannot take away this kind of things that is still running in your back of your mind, what is behind it, what is standing there.
Right.
So this is generation after generation, they carry this with them.
Correct. Okay, so that's true. We'll come back to a little bit later. You'll see that many generations later, the Chachamim see a correlation. Well, just to show you, the Asar Harugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs. Uh-huh. The rabbis see that those 10 martyrs are actually payback for the 10 brothers
right.
Who sold Yosef. We'll get there in a little bit. It relates to some fascinating sources on the next part of the sheet. Any other questions on this point?
Yes. That's
so that's the end of the pasuk. I believe it's a mishlei. You stir gachalim are coals. So you're stirring a coal on top of the guy's head, which I think means like you're angering him. You're inciting him. As you continue to be benevolent when that individual is so terrible, you know, acted so terribly wrong to you.
It's okay. Like a fire when if we're going to Moshe Rabbeinu, he was sitting on the lap of Pharaoh.
Right.
Yeah, there was also the fire.
Gachalim, interesting, very interesting imagery. Yeah. 100%. They carried it, and you see the 100%.
It almost makes it like if they didn't have that guilt.
Exactly, and we'll have to see what 100%. They carry it with them, and the question will be, and we'll come to this at the end, is what's Yosef's response to all this? Very interesting. Yes.
I just want to clear it up for myself because that's what I believe, that Yosef was totally genuine. I mean,
we didn't get there yet. Give me a minute. First of all, let's look at what the brothers actually.
But who told Jacob?
Nobody told
Nobody.
Jacob.
Nobody.
Okay, 1 second. So let's see. So in source number 5, the Torah tells us, "Vitzavu al Yosef leimor." They commanded a message to be sent to Yosef, saying, "Avicha tziva lifnei moso leimor." Our dad commanded before he passed away, saying, "Now this is a lie. This is all a lie." And we already mentioned the Ramban. I forget if it was last week or 2 weeks ago that the Ramban comments that Yaakov never found out Yaakov was under the impression that when Yosef went to Shechem, which was a notoriously dangerous city, that he was just captured by some bandits, and the brothers never shared with them, and that was something that we discussed. I think it was 2 weeks ago. No, it was last week. We discussed last week because the Torah tells us that the brothers come back up to Yaakov and share with Yaakov all that Yosef mentioned. And Rambam points out, it doesn't literally mean all that Yosef mentioned, because Yosef said, I am your brother whom you sold into slavery. That, of course, was never mentioned to Yaakov, and he remained completely unaware. So the brothers fabricate a story. In source 5, Pasuk Yitzayin, what did Yaakov, quote unquote, say to us? Ko somruli Yosef. This is what you should tell Yosef. Ana sana pesha checha v'chatasam. Lift up, release your brother's guilt and their sin. Kira agumulcha, they did bad to you. Vata sana lefesha avdei elokei avicha. Vayavich Yosef bidabram eilav. Right, and now forgive them. I apologize. Kira agumulcha means you. How do you translate that? Kira agumulcha. How would you translate that?
Kira
agumulcha. Yeah.
He saw your revenge. He saw your payment.
He saw
the payments that you are going to pay.
Okay, we'll come back to this. It's an interesting. Ra'ag mulcha seems to be that you paid them back then. You already paid them back. So we'll get there. Ve'ata sana lefesha adei elokei avicha. Now again, remove the sin of your servant of the God of your father. And of course, this prompts Yosef to feel terrible. Vayavich Yosef b'dabra milah. Yosef starts just bawling. He feels terrible, and when you see someone that you love feel cruddy, you feel cruddy. And that's exactly what's going on over here. Yosef saw that his brothers feel terrible. That made Yosef feel really terrible.
I don't think so.
But I want to just point out a number of different things. I'm also starting to kind of sow the seeds that this was not a fully functional family quite yet. First of all, the fact that they have to fake this story itself is semi-dysfunctional. Also, how do the brothers relay this message? Do they go to Yosef?
No, they pick someone.
They send messengers. Vayitzavu el Yosef. Right? Please, they turn to whoever it was. Please go tell Yosef the following. They were not able, for one reason or another, to actually come face to face to Yosef. So we don't know. Like Rashi, maybe Yosef removed himself and they were no longer given permission. Was it distance? Was it emotional distance? I'm just pointing out, just take note, that Yosef is not greeted by his brothers. His brothers send messengers and do not deliver these words directly.
But this only could have happened if Jacob knew what the brothers did.
Well, why do you say that?
Because otherwise, why should Jacob told that?
You're saying the fact that the brothers send this type of message implies that they understood, that Yaakov knew full well what was going on, and that's why Yaakov is saying now, forgive them.
Right.
Okay, that's not so difficult to believe. Maybe Yaakov did know, at least according to the brothers, now want to make sure that Yosef forgives them. Or maybe the brothers thought that Yaakov really had gotten wind of this, although it was never spoken about. In families or some things that happened, you don't speak about.
Just did the brachot, or the curses.
Right. So you're saying, why did Yaakov bring it up? Okay. So first of all, that's why Vayavich Yosef v'dabra milad. That's probably Yosef cries because he knows this is false. This is all made up, and Yosef knows that immediately because he knows that Yaakov never knew what took place. But the fact that brothers have so much anxiety, and that's anxiety that he's causing them, makes Yosef feel terrible. Yes, doctor.
He cried for another reason.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because if he thought that his father was on it because he wanted to punish him, it was fine. But if he knew the father if he now understands that the father knew all the time what happened to him, he feels bad he didn't contact his father.
I think you're looping in, Dr. Spear, I think you're looping in an item which does not belong right over here. I don't think that that's it. I think that that's not textually coherent at this point.
I think maybe for Tessie to understand, I have a partner with the Hebrew word, Vayitzavu.
And they commanded.
Like, this is a command, right. This is an order. So this is very ambiguous. This is very unknown. I don't understand it.
It's Vaitzavuel or Yitzavuel?
Vaitzavuel, Yosef, means they commanded. No, it means they commanded that people should go to Yosef. Yeah. They commanded that people should go to Yosef.
So who are the people? Why is it hidden from us?
So that, because it's irrelevant who went. But I think the point that we have to take out of that is that they didn't go themselves. That's very telling. Alana.
Okay, my point is that I think Yosef cried because Yosef cried that his brothers, he thought that they had done it to Shuvah.
Okay.
And now he knows they're lying. And he cried because he was so upset that...
I mean, he thought that the brothers...
They fell again, yeah.
Interesting. It could be. I can't argue with you because it's not in the text one way or the other.
Okay.
That's a very interesting idea. So let's look for a moment, put on our Parshanut hat, and let's see that there's a phrase in Pasuk Yud Zayin which does not seem to flow particularly well. And I specifically refer to the middle part of the statement that the brothers said to Yosef. Right? What do the brothers say? Sana pesha achecha v'chata san. So first of all, what's the difference between pesha and chet? Pesha is a willful sin, deliberate sin. Chet is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strong mistake, but it's a mistake. What's a tighter way that phrase should have been worded? Sana pesha v'chata'at achacha. The word achacha is juxtaposed in the middle. It doesn't belong there. It's inserted in the middle. It really should be pesha v'chata'at achacha. Why is the word achacha really only modifying pesha? It's leaving chata'am separate.
Maybe so, because not all the brothers were 100% in the
deal. Interesting. So let's look. It's not what I like that idea. It's not what the Kliyakar says. Look at the source number 6. Says the Kliyakar, Hayala lomar sana pesha v'chata'at achacha. The Torah should have flowed a little bit better. It should have said, raise up, forgive the willful sin and the inadvertent sin of your brothers. Why does the Torah insert the word achecha between two words that naturally go together? That's A. And here it comes back to the point I referenced earlier when we were translating the pasuk. Uman esinas tamhu she'amar ki ra'ah gimulcha. And what is the meaning? Yosef, forgive your brothers, quote unquote, says Yaakov, because you already paid them back bad. What does that mean? So Venira, Shahaya Khan Pesha Vichata. So says the Kliyakar, if you look back at the story of Yosef, there are two elements, two parts of sin. There's this willful sin and there's the inadvertent sin. Ha Pesha Hu Sharatza Lehargo Biadayim. What was the willful sin? The deliberate sin. Well, that was their initial thought to actually kill Yosef with their hands. Vuhu Einu Chayav Misa Biyadei Adam. That Yosef did not deserve to be put to death. Even according to the way they understood the situation, that Yosef was bringing back all the bad news to their father, a person not chayav misa for speaking Lashon Hara. So that was the pesha. The fact that the brothers contemplated murder, that was totally unreasonable, uncalled for. Hachatat hu, masha machruhu la'eved. But interestingly, the lower of the two one was not an infraction, one was an outright sin. But hachatan huma shemachru l'aved, the inadvertent sin is that which they sold him to be a slave. V'yesh lehem k'tzas hitnatzlus al zeh lomar, they actually could respond to Yosef. If Yosef called them out on it and said, how could you sell me as a slave? They actually have a decent response. Lefi shehevi di batam, lomar shekorin lebnei ashvachos avadim. They would say, Yosef, you were bringing back this bad news to dad that we were calling the sons of the maidservants slaves. That was unreasonable, uncalled for. Al king gam lulo kimoso lemochro leben. And that's why we sold you as a slave. Now this is not pshat. This is the Kliyakar trying to understand how you are able to analyze this phrase that does not flow so well. So the pesha, the deliberate sin, that was in your contemplation of murder, totally uncalled for the situation, well beyond what Yosef's actions required. On the other hand, there's chet. There's the chet in the sense that you were reporting back to dad that we were making fun of some of the sons that they're slaves. So we responded by selling you as a slave. hooray that we have some reason we could say what we did. Al-Kain, this is creative. I'm just sharing with you because it's creative. I don't think it's necessarily pshat. Al-Kain emar sana lepesha achecha. That's why the brothers, when they're crafting this message, they say, release us of the willful sin because we're your brothers. So regarding the pesha, their contemplation of murder, they have no words to respond. They're speechless. It was totally inappropriate. That's why they say, you have to treat us like a brother because we have no way to respond to you. It was totally unreasonable, uncalled for, and we're sorry. We need you to be merciful on us like you would to your brother. Aval v'chatasav, regarding the chet, dinhu shetimcho, we demand, it's strict justice that you release us. Ki ra'ah gimulcha, you did bad to us. Rotza lomar, what does that mean? Sheyesh lam ktsas hitnatzlus. What's linatzel? To save, right? They have a way of saving themselves. Shegamal lach osahara. Dainu adibara. We were just paying you back for what you did. It was tit for tat. It wasn't as uncalled for. And therefore, you really need to forgive us because what we did was not unfounded. Uvazeh miyushav lama hikdim hapesha lechata'at. That's why the brothers, when they're crafting this message, also mention the deliberate sin, and only afterwards the inadvertent doesn't really fit here. It's not inadvertent, it's just a lesser sin. That's really what it is. Usually speaking, if a person is asking for a favor, you ask for the small favor first, and then the big favor. So the brothers are crafting this message to send to Yaakov, that send in the name of Yaakov, Yosef, forgive us. They should first reference the chet, and then the pesha. But the brothers switched that order because they felt, what do they really need forgiveness? The pesha. Pesha, you have to treat us like a brother. We need to be forgiven. We contemplated killing you. Unreasonable. We're sorry. V'chatasam, there was also some sin here, but it wasn't fully uncalled for. You went back to dad and told dad, we called some of his children slaves, and we sold you to be a slave. Not that that's okay, but it at least has some grounds for their actions. It explains a little bit why they did what they did.
Why did he call some of the children's names? In his dreams they were all...
No, so not the dreams, but the Midrashim say that that's what Yosef was doing. He was reporting back that the brothers were calling the children of Bilhah and Zilpah slaves. Okay, we'll skip the Malbim for now.
I have to add something. Because of this, he was surprised, almost not he was played with the children of the Shfachot.
Okay.
He was very close to them.
Right.
And they are, instead of
defending him, that's true.
They are doing the same thing.
That's true. Okay, I wanted just to share that with you. I think it was just an interesting, semi-technical, but an important comment to make. I'm really excited to share with you source number 9, 10, 11, and 12, because it's just fantastic. Just fantastic. So let's read carefully what Yosef does in response. After crying, the Torah tells us, we're at source number 9. Vayelchu gam echav, vayeplu lefanav, vayomru, hinenu lechal avadim. So you see the brothers were actually waiting kind of behind the door to see how Yosef would react. And once they see Yosef crying, so they run in also, and which just goes to show you that they did have permission, right? So you can't tell me the reason they didn't send the messengers, the reason they had to send messengers is because they didn't have access to Yosef. Clearly they had immediate access to Yosef. They sent the messengers because they thought it would not, I don't know, maybe Yosef wouldn't react as harshly if he would have to encounter his brother sending this message. They couldn't say it with a straight face. I'm not sure. But for whatever reason, the brothers did not actually go themselves and deliver Yaakov's message. They sent messengers. But after they see Yosef is crying, so they all run in. Vayomer aleihem Yosef. Yosef says, and listen to these words, they're very powerful. Al tiru, don't be afraid. Ki atachas elokim ani. Am I in place of God? V'atem chashavtem alai ra'ah. You have thought about doing bad to me. Elohim chashva l'tova. But God thought about doing good. L'man asu kayom hazel l'achayos amrav. So I'm being in this position to sustain a large nation. V'ata al tiru anochi achakel atchem. Don't worry, I'll sustain you. V'atapchem v'inachem osam v'yidavar libam. So he comforted them. He spoke to their hearts and the situation was fully diffused. Fine. What doesn't Yosef say? I forgive you. What doesn't Yosef say? He doesn't say, I forgive you. Look at, again, look back, just one moment. Look back in source number 5, Pasuk Yitzayin. They draft a message. Yaakov says, Yosef, forgive them. Forgive them. Ana sana pesha achecha, sana la pesha avdei lokei avicha. Twice in that Pasuk. Forgive them, forgive them, forgive them. And Yosef responds saying, there's no reason to be afraid. I'm not in place of Hashem. Mm-hmm. I didn't control the situation. I'm meant to be here. Does he say Machulach?
No, because he knew that Yaakov was not, the story is fabricated.
Okay.
So therefore, he couldn't really.
Why not? That only reinforces the need.
I'm not in place of Hashem.
Right.
It's your.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So listen to this. Listen to this. Unbelievable. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They don't say you're sorry.
Yes. Well, they send. They send messages to Yosef, telling Yosef he should forgive them.
But because their father said that, but they just never said it. Uh-huh. This is something you really need to say.
Interesting. Interesting. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yes.
Can you force forgiveness? You cannot force love. You cannot force forgiveness.
Right. That's true. You cannot force forgiveness. Although I skipped. If you go back to source number 8, the Hadar Zikanim just notices how much emphasis they put on forgiveness. And when they draft and craft this message, exactly, that Yaakov supposedly sends to Yosef, look at what the Hadar Zikanim says. Ana, sana, bata, sana. 3 times. Ana, sana. Sana ve'ata sana shinu v'shilshu levakish mechila. They repeat it, and they actually say it 3 times. Mikana umrabo senu. From here, the rabbis learned shetzarich levakish adam mechila mechaveru gimel pamim. This serves as the paradigm of how you're supposed to forgive your brother. After 3 times, just forgive the guy.
Say you forgive, but sometimes
you
deep down in your heart, it wasn't.
You can't forgive, but you can't forget.
So look at what Rabbeinu Bechaya says, because again our holy sages never miss a beat. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya in source number 11, V'hine achiv bikshu mimenu mechila. The brothers were asking for forgiveness. So whether or not the brothers go to Yosef themselves and say forgive us, versus sending a message that they're drafting to be sent to Yosef, forgive us. Either way, the brothers were asking for forgiveness. Your point is well taken. The brothers don't go themselves, and that's telling. But they're asking for forgiveness. They're begging for forgiveness. But we don't see anywhere in the Torah that Yosef says you are forgiven. The rabbi teaches the Gemara Bava Kama, a person who sins against his friend and does tshuva, eino nimcha la'olam ad sheyirtzas chavero, is never forgiven until the friend who was wronged actually says you are forgiven. And even though the Torah in our parsha says v'yinachem osam v'yedaber aliban, that he comforted them, that he spoke to their hearts, shenira bazesh shayolahem ritzam Yosef, you see that they were appeased by what Yosef did. In the bolded words, and this is chilling, mikol makom lo ra'inu sheyaskir hakasav mechila b'Yosef. We never see that Yosef says, you are forgiven. Nowhere does Yosef says, I will not carry this deliberate sin and this less egregious sin. Nowhere does he say that. And if this is the case, the brothers die with their sin in their hand. Without the forgiveness. The only way to fully be forgiven is through forgiveness, and Yosef does not provide that. The sin was like signed and sealed and put away until the appointed time. Isn't that a chilling insight of Rabbeinu Bechaya?
Yes.
Chilling. Yes.
I understand. Actually, that's a chador, totally different.
Okay.
You cannot get a mechilah before you do tshuva. The latzeh chador is the person who perpetrated asked for forgiveness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And once they ask for forgiveness, if the other one...
No, but means they ask and the person who was wronged says, it's okay, I forgive you. Shiritza Chavir doesn't mean you simply go through the action. Of asking for forgiveness. It actually means that you are successful in asking for forgiveness.
It's already a success because the person saw that he did wrong.
It's part of it, but that's not the full picture.
I mean, you see, by coming and lying to your sin,
linguistically, I can understand
right.
that way. They didn't deserve to be forgiven.
Right.
Because when you come to ask for forgiveness
right.
for someone, you admit that what you did was terrible.
Right.
You don't say, our father told us to come.
Okay, so when,
but you admit it yourself.
Right.
Only then can you be forgiven.
Okay, your point is well taken. The brothers do not go directly to Yosef. The brothers, we never see the brothers saying to Yosef, we are sorry.
So, also
right. So it is only thickens the plot, and this is what Haksava Kabbalah points out in source number 12, and we'll end in a minute or two, because I know the hour is late, but it kind of leaves us with a major question of what was the role of the brothers in the sale? What did the brothers do? Maybe they did not feel the need to ask for such forgiveness because they were not the ones to pull Yosef out of the pit. Maybe it was all one big miscommunication. The brothers threw Yosef in and they wanted to take him out, but you know what? The Yishmaelim came in instead. Who knows? I think this just deepens the question.
It would have been worse.
I don't know.
If that's the case, I think that the brothers themselves are still happy with whatever they did, because I don't think that they're asking for him forgiveness. But I think that Yosef, in the Pasuk of Aleph, he actually did forgive them, and he actually is going to care for him, for them, because it says, "Vaynachem otam vaydaber al libam,"
okay,
which means that he is really talking to their heart, into their heart. So this.
You can talk. You can be very nice, and you can be very warm and accepting, and still not give forgiveness. Anyway, so I will stop.
So both sides. Just
give you number 12.
So number 12. Just the Haksava Kabbalah, which we've seen a number of his comments in the past couple of weeks. He points out that the language that Yosef uses, "Ve'atem chashavtem alai ra'ah," you thought about doing bad to me, seems to imply that the brothers did not sell Yosef. Because had the brothers sold Yosef, what word should Yosef have used? V'atem asitem li ra'ah. You did bad to me. Chashavtem implies that Yosef understood that they wanted to do bad, but they were never able to do so. They never executed their plan, because by the time they returned back to the pit, Yosef was gone. So we end Sefer Bereishis with lots of questions and not so many answers. We see a semi-dysfunctional family. We see Yosef not being willing, at least according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, to fully forgive. We see the question, what actually happened, to be murkier than ever. We just don't really know what took place on that fateful day. It's a very challenging story.
But Rabbi, because of what happens like in the next generation, on and on, had Joseph said, I forgive you, fully forgive you, Hashem couldn't have carried on what he needed to do.
So, there are lots of questions. There's a lot to be said. This is a very challenging text. It's a very challenging text.
Why do we say that the brother, we always say the brother doesn't show it to Yosef?
Right.
When you're selling something, you get something in return.
Well, they say that they, according to Midrash, they got shoes in return.
Okay, they got shoes. Oh, so therefore,
yeah.
They were complete 100% false, and I cannot understand it.
But you don't see that in the text clearly. Anyway, I'm happy. I'll stay for another minute or two. There's not another Shinar of Muslims in Israel. With Hashem's help, next week we'll start our studies of Sefer Shinar.